You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are watching, listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. It's 7/26/21. And well, what's going on with home sales? Time to buy, time to sell. Is it just taking a pause? And what about cryptos? What's going on there? Well, we're going to cover that and a lot more. John Rubino is with us now. Don't forget, dollarcollapse.com, must reading if you want to have any idea, some semblance of an idea of what's really going on in the world. John, hey, welcome back. We took a little break and we're doing our summer slowdown routine here, but so are new home sales. And lumber prices are crashing. What do you make of it?
Hey, Carrie. Yeah, could housing finally be rolling over? This turned out to be an insane bubble. You know, it's comparable and in some ways a bigger bubble than the one that almost blew up the global economy in the previous decade. And house prices have just been soaring lately. I think the last read on the Case-Shiller Home Price Index was it had home prices in general rising at the fastest rate ever, you know, like 15% year over year in a lot of cases. It was this crazy number. And because houses are already beyond the means of most Americans, that can't go on forever because once people can't afford to buy houses, they have to stop buying houses. And then the cycle turns down. And that's starting to look like what's happening now because new home sales just came out down 6%. Year over year. And the number of homes for sale is spiking now all of a sudden after years of really low inventory. And lumber, like you said, is tanking. It's back down, well, basically wiped out all of its 2021 gains. And they were massive gains in the last couple of months. So all of a sudden, housing is an industry that is kind of in decline. That doesn't mean that you won't get a good price if you sell your house right now, because prices aren't dropping. They're still insanely high. But it does mean that the trajectory of everything has rolled over and now is now starting to trend down. Which had to happen sooner or later. And the question is, does it matter to the overall economy? You know, housing is a really big part of the economy. So a crash makes a difference. It actually cuts the amount of growth that the economy is capable of or puts us into a recession. It's not clear that that's what housing is going to do this time around, because so far the trend change has been pretty mild. But that it stops going up at all is a pretty big deal for the economy, because the Fed right now is starting to, they've been talking about tapering, et cetera, for a while. And every time they actually put a date to it, the stock market tanks and forces them to back off. But this housing thing, you know, if housing were to roll over, that might give the Fed some cover for not tapering. It might allow them to continue extreme ease for somewhat longer. I don't know what any of that means, but it's just the dynamic out there now. And housing is now a big part of it.
For sure. And if you look at the housing ETF, the XHB, that's the spider, S&P Home Builders, it peaked. Well, we're looking at the past 6 months, but for practical purposes, past year, it peaked on May 3rd of this year at around 79. It's currently trading around 73.5. So it hasn't crashed, but certainly it's put in its high, could be its cycle high for that matter. Home builders, probably a good sector to avoid, at least until the uncertainty departs. But, you know, I find it amazing is that lumber had more than quadrupled and now it's back to its old price. And I guess if you live up in Canada, you're probably upset. If you're building a home and you haven't broken ground yet, you're probably thrilled, right?
Yeah. A lot of people, actually, I was talking to a home builder, and I think I told this story maybe a month ago on your show, but he was telling me that they were as busy as they'd ever been 3 or 4 months ago. And then everybody started canceling projects because the price of lumber and a lot of other things pushed the ultimate cost of the house beyond the means of the people who were building it. Because they would have had to eat into their retirement savings to cover the overruns. So they just put everything on hold. So this guy, you know, this home builder who had been really busy was all of a sudden a lot less busy building houses, but he was still spending all his time explaining the price increases to all his customers. So he wasn't a happy guy. So it you know, could be that people like that are going to like this environment a lot more, because now home builders can go back to their clients and say, oh, by the way, you know, framing the house is going to cost $10,000 less than we told you it would, you know, and that, which is way nicer than the opposite. So I think this will make life easier for home builders if demand continues. That's the thing, you know, when prices are going down, that's usually because demand is dropping. So we'll see. I don't know. I have a couple short positions in some home builders, and so far they haven't worked out, but I still have high hopes that, you know, that this market will roll over enough to hurt the home builders and let my short positions go up.
Hey, well, speaking of housing, we've got the impending end of the eviction moratorium. And is that going to lead to millions of people being thrown out on the streets, John?
You know, it might send a lot of people back to work. So, because we got really two parts to that question. One is how many people can't pay the rent? And the other is how many people aren't working because they haven't felt like they needed to work? And, you know, the Venn diagram that you would draw of those two groups and see where they overlap. If it's a big overlap, then that means the labor market will be flooded with new people desperate to pay their rent. So you'll have some evictions, but a lot more people entering the workforce, which would on balance be pretty good for the economy. But that's another one of those things where we'll just have to see, because we don't know for sure how many people can't pay their rent. A lot of people aren't paying their rent, I'm sure. But now that they have to go back to paying their rent, we'll find out who's who, and could be a fairly big number, because to the extent that people aren't working, they can't really have a lot of disposable income just coming in from somewhere else, or a lot of savings stashed off on the side or whatever. I kind of think there will be a lot of evictions to begin with, and then it'll all sort itself out.
This with, is part of a bigger story. And that is the end of extended emergency unemployment benefits. And an amazing thing happened. Talk about like a live economic experiment right before your very eyes. We had red states where they're saying the employers were complaining, we can't get anybody to work because they're getting paid more money not to work. So 20 some odd states end the emergency unemployment benefits, meaning the extended benefits and the fact you got an extra $300 a week more, which probably all of it was illegal. It was all done through Trump's executive orders and then Biden's. So probably it was unconstitutional, but we don't really care about that anymore because nobody cares about the Constitution and you do what you got to do. But now that's even so, what we've seen happen in the red states or I can't remember the Spanish word for it because I don't want to get censored by our digital overlords. But in any event, in the red states, an amazing thing has happened. They got rid of the extended benefits and their unemployment rates are dropping like a stone. And yet the blue states are going, they're running them out. They're running out the clock till September. And for some reason, John, that I can't understand at all, their unemployment rates are staying the same. They're not going down. Now, why would that be?
I don't know. It's a mystery. But, you know, we've been running this experiment for quite a while now with liberal policies in place in California, New York, Illinois, et cetera, and more conservative policies in place in Florida, Texas, et cetera, et cetera. And people are voting with their feet. right now, and they have been for a few years, where everybody's moving away from the places that are run the way California is and towards places that are run the way Texas is. So that's interesting. And it'll be interesting to see what it leads to, because think about it. It's not going to make a place like California more sensible if all the sensible Californians move out, right? It would make them more crazy.
I think that a long time ago, John.
So it could be that, the voting with the feet thing that we've got going on now actually polarizes the country more than you would think it would. You think it would homogenize the country. But it could be that the early effects are to make the differences between different governing philosophies out there even starker. You know, this weekend we had some friends from California, by the way, visiting. And oh my God, you know, they've got horror stories to tell and videos. You know, let me show you this video that my daughter took in this place, you know, and it's homeless encampments here and other really scary stuff going on over there. So yeah, it doesn't seem like the kind of thing that can continue as if it's as we're hearing that it is. So we'll see. But, the old saying, as goes California, so goes the country. You got to hope that's not true this time.
Yeah, it could be as good as Texas or as goes Florida, because it's booming here in Florida by any account. Now, how much longer that'll continue, if there's a housing dump, I don't know. But certainly Texas is doing well. Florida is doing relatively well. And they're just leaving in droves from those blue states that their policies are failing. And so it's just interesting, though, to see it, the real live lab thing. Look, it's like people believe what they want to believe. I had somebody tell me the other day that Cuomo didn't kill all those people in the nursing homes, that it was all brought in by employees and visitors. And it's like, I said something, yeah. And then I said, this is a pointless conversation. There's nothing to be gained here. And if people want to be, you know, ignorant and blind, then so be it. That's the way it's going to be. Hey, so talking about ignorance and blind, we've got to talk in a little bit of code here. There's a certain jab that is controversial among people in the country and the world. And we've got protests against the jab taking place, mass protests in Europe, like all over the place. And then in the U.S., they're thinking of a new face covering mandate that it's just not going to go in certain states here. It's just not going to be done, period.
Yeah, this is interesting because they're talking about new face covering mandates for vaccinated people, not just for the unvaccinated, but for everybody. And I kind of think we're done with that in the U.S. You know, it really has the feel like of something that, you know, the lockdowns happened and everything. Now people are pretty much done, or at least a significant number of people are just not going to go back no matter what. And like you said, we're seeing protests, street protests in other countries over this kind of thing where they're, you know, the police are flat out wading into protests of people who are, you know, otherwise peaceful and who just don't want to be locked down and don't want to wear a mask all the time, and arresting them. And so it's a different kind of social unrest. It's with people who you wouldn't, by looking at them, you wouldn't expect them to be out in the streets fighting with the cops, but that's the way it's happening. And so I kind of think in the U.S., if they try it, most Americans will just ignore it. And then, if, you know, if 60% of the people are ignoring something, there's not a whole lot that the police can do about it, because 60% of the population outnumbers the police by 20 or 30 to 1 or 50 to 1 or whatever the number would be. So they would just be swamped. You know, they couldn't arrest 60% of the population. And if they don't arrest them, then everybody just does whatever they want. So I kind of think that's how it'll go. It'll be one of those kind of peaceful things where, you know, we try to do something, everybody ignores it, and then they just kind of quietly take back the rule and try to forget it ever happened.
In LA County, the Los Angeles County Sheriff, no greater ideologue to the left than he, said, we're not supporting, we're not going to enforce the face covering mandate that the health department just handed down. And in his words, because it's not backed up by science. The one before, that was backed up by science. But this one, no. No science behind this one. And we got too much stuff to do. We have too many homeless that we have to, you know, give a limo service to try to save them from dying on the streets. We just can't be bothered with any face covering mandate. That to me was like, okay, you lost the sheriff of Los Angeles County, which I think 45% of LA County is unincorporated in the jurisdiction of the sheriff. You're finished. End of discussion. And that's in California, no less. So forget it. So what about these earnings reports? They look like they're going to be pretty substantial, but they've already been baked into not just this cake, this birthday cake, but probably two more birthday cakes down the road, right?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Arcana Corporation is on the verge of bringing the world's highest grade silver mine into production. The Revenue Virginius mine in Colorado has proven improbable silver reserves grading nearly 37 ounces per ton silver with an all-in sustaining production cost of only US $8 per ounce of silver. The mine is fully permitted with infrastructure already in place, and the company has announced they plan to commence production in 2020. Achieving successful production usually results in a significant upward share price re-rating on the Lassonde curve. Arcana trades under the ticker AUN in Toronto and AUNFF in New York. To learn more, go to arcana.com. That's A-U-R-C-A-N-A.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Oh, yeah. Today's stock prices in general include great earnings for like the next 5 years, because that's what it would take to get us to a normal price earnings ratio on the Standard & Poor's 500. So I don't think earnings will matter for most companies because, like you said, it's already baked into their share price. Bad earnings would matter. You know, that would probably crash a lot of stocks out there. But where it might matter is in the gold mining sector. Because the big miners, you know, at $1,800 an ounce gold, the big miners are making a lot of, well, if not, they may not be making a lot of money, but they're generating a lot of cash flow, which is, that's kind of two different things from an accounting standpoint, but cash flow is what really matters. And if they're generating a lot of free cash, that's, first of all, that's just good in and of itself, but it, furthermore, it allows them to pay off debt and raise their dividends, and then to go out and make acquisitions to increase their reserves. You know, first, when you get some free cash flow, you raise your dividend or pay off debt, because that's the conservative thing to do after a long drought. But when it's gone on for a while, then you start thinking about building an empire. And we're probably a year away from that stage. In other words, another year of good free cash flow for the big miners, and they're going to be out there buying up everybody else in sight. And it's going to be this feeding frenzy that sends the junior miners through the roof. But in the meantime, good numbers will probably help, or at least support to an extent, the price of the gold miners. So this is a really nice time fundamentally for that sector, because gold is holding up pretty well. You know, it's right around $1,800 an ounce still right now, which is a good high price. And, you know, with what we're going into, which is the best seasonal time for precious metals and a really volatile time probably for financial assets, which will lead the Fed to promise QE to infinity, pretty good time, you know, for precious metals, and a very good time for the miners. So I think the junior miners are just, in some cases, you know, the really high quality junior miners are just such obvious buyout candidates that it's almost too easy right now. That's what it feels like. Some of these guys, you know, they've already kind of outlined mines that would be attractive to the big miners. So all they have to do is wait now for the big miners to start feeling that new free cash burning a hole in their pockets and come a-calling. So I think the next year will be characterized by a lot of M&A action in the mining sector, with a lot of the big guys buying out a lot of the little guys at nice premiums.
Yeah, I have no doubt that it's going to happen. And we're seeing buyouts. Intel just bought a big, huge one. You're starting to see the M&A pick up for sure. So just a matter of time. our commander in chief, looks like his mental state, some people just discovered there might be an issue with his state of cognitive decline. I guess they just noticed. What happened?
You know, there's a comedian named Bill Maher.
Oh, yeah.
Who, a while ago, when Biden first took office, he came out and he lamented the fact that comedians didn't have any as much material from Biden because there was nothing you could make fun of him for, which just seemed like an outrageous statement then. And now, my God, you know, but Biden is doing those things where he gets up and makes a little set speech and then he kind of drifts off topic and it's just word salad. You know, it's a paragraph that makes absolutely no sense at all. So all of a sudden people are starting to pick up on the fact that he's not completely there. You know, he's not the Joe Biden of 20 years ago.
Well, that wasn't all there either.
Yeah, I mean, he was always kind of gaffe prone, but he was pretty sharp back in the day. Where I mean, he could string a few sentences together that made some sense, even if we disagreed with his policies. And stuff. But now, geez. So anyhow, it's coming to light. His poll numbers are dropping, and people are starting to say it publicly. You know, people are starting to make fun of Joe Biden's cognitive situation, and that's fairly new for us. I mean, towards the end of Ronald Reagan's second term. Mm-hmm. His age was really showing, you know, and we know now in retrospect that that was the early stages of Alzheimer's. But Joe Biden is really just starting, you know, he's in his first year. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes.
All the people in Congress who've got cognitive issues, Nancy Pelosi, for sure. You know, she's had them for quite some time. And a number of senators, you know, they're like, they really need to consider assisted living. Because otherwise, if they all stick around there forever, you know, they might as well just turn the Capitol into an assisted living facility and let them stay there forever till they die.
You know, as a Social Security recipient myself, I don't want to sound ageist, but why do we have 80-year-old Congress people? You know, because there are a lot of strong politicians in their 30s and 40s who really deserve a shot. And if you're going to be, you know, Nancy Pelosi in office for 30 years, how many potentially good congresspeople never get the chance, right? And so we're not using our talent to the extent that we could be by letting these guys stick around for so long. You know, I don't know if there should be a mandatory retirement age, but some kind of term limits really make a lot of sense in public life. I mean, a lot of companies have term limits where you can't be the CEO of a company into your 90s in a lot of cases.
Or a pilot, you know, pilots.
Yeah, yeah.
Got to quit at 65 in the U.S., but then they can fly private jets for a while, and they can fly overseas because they have a pilot shortage there. But I'll settle for not necessarily better politicians, just less worse. All right. If we could just get them not as bad.
Well, because a lot of the bad comes from the fact that these guys have safe seats. It's like tenure if you're a teacher or a college professor or something, right? There's no longer any real need for you to excel because they're not going to get rid of you no matter what, you know? And you see a lot of that out there. You know, Nancy Pelosi, God, she's very good at raising money, but raising money is not really, I mean, it's part of the job, but it's not the job. You know, 70% of being a congressperson or a senator should be making good laws and building bridges and, you know, to people who disagree with you, stuff like that. You know, you should be out there being a statesman. And these guys have just devolved into money machines, basically. They raise money, they give it to people who then owe Nancy Pelosi a favor. And, you know, you're seeing that with AOC and the rest of the squad, right? Remember those bomb-throwing socialists that the Democrats elected, and now they've in one term just turned into your basic mainstream careerist Democrat. And I'm not just picking on Democrats. Republicans have the same problem. They've got a lot of people that have been there since we were in high school or college at least. And you know, I think you can make the case that it shouldn't be that way. We should find some way to generate a little churn, you know, so we get some new blood in there and get rid of the really, really old guys.
Don't forget, when a congressman is done with their tenure in Congress, all the money left in their campaign funds, they get to keep.
Right. Yeah, as if Nancy Pelosi needs more money, right? Because she's already doing insider trading, which we forgot to mention before. You know, she and her husband buy the stocks of the tech companies that Nancy Pelosi regulates right before the government makes a really positive announcement about that regulation. So they're making tens of millions of dollars with what is blatantly insider trading, and they're getting away with it. So that might be one way we get rid of them, is we put them in jail for committing the crimes that they're publicly committing.
Now, there's a thought, but they don't seem to want to put anyone in jail. I don't want to get too into the health issues of the past year and a half, except to say that there's a certain doctor who was called out before the Senate and did not acquit himself well, as we might say in the law profession. In fact, he came out looking guilty as hell, John, and I don't want to mention his name because our digital overlords are out there tracking everything we say. I mean, I've already got the Bezos security system set up. I should say the Bezos surveillance system set up in my new home. That's called Alexa. So between Alexa and all the other tech oligarchs, pretty soon I expect them to come to the house and just give me a permanent gag. So I can't say anything, but you know what I'm saying. That guy did not look good. He was caught with his hand in the cookie jar, and he was eviscerated by a certain libertarian-leaning senator. How's that for code?
That narrows it down quite a bit. But
only one.
Yeah. So here's what we kind of know now. The U.S. was funding what is obviously gain-of-function research in China on the coronavirus and related viruses. So we were doing that and pretending that we weren't doing that. That unnamed doctor was just going before Congress and saying, no, we do not do that. We do not fund that. You don't know what you're talking about. And it turns out, based on documents that nobody claims are false, that we were indeed doing that, you know? So it's completely possible now. We don't know anything for certain yet, but it's looking possible that the coronavirus pandemic implicates both the US government and China at the same time. It's like we were all involved in that and we all share some blame for it. So it's understandable that nobody wants it to go that way, right? Because a lot of people would have to answer for a lot of things if that's the way it turned out. And, you know, it's looking like it's possible that that's where we're going, which will make this next year really fascinating, because that's not the kind of thing you can hide, even with today's mainstream media, because even they are having to admit now that the lab leak thesis is at least possible. It's not some crazy conspiracy theory. We still don't know the answers to any of this stuff for sure, but at least it's something that is conceivable given the facts that we now have in front of us. So that could turn into something really fascinating from a political standpoint.
Yeah, fat chance of that, but I'll believe it when I see it. Hey, Bitcoin confab between Musk and Dorsey. Now we've got Bezos saying that Amazon may... didn't say for sure, but it might start taking Bitcoin. I don't know. I don't think anybody's, just because you take it. I made this point earlier in another interview. Like, I'm willing to take bullion, platinum, palladium, silver, gold for anything, any service I offer. I'm willing to take it. But just because I'm willing to take it doesn't mean that my clients are willing to give it to me, right? So just because you accept it, that's like a lot of businesses still accept Diners Club. The only thing is nobody has a Diners Club card anymore, right? I mean, when was the last time you saw somebody take a Diners Club, right?
Yeah, it doesn't mean that Bitcoin is home free and that it's a competing currency, but you know, this is a lot of corporate acceptance out there, because PayPal is talking about accepting Bitcoin, and the credit card companies are seriously looking at it. And some of the big investment banks are now offering their clients Bitcoin storage and trading services. So there's some acceptance going on out there among some really high-powered corporations and money managers. The question is, what happens when that starts to threaten the Federal Reserve? Because if, you know, if you can buy a Tesla with Bitcoin, that kind of makes it money. And that means you're kind of stepping on the toes of the Fed and Treasury and threatening their ability to create new dollars out of thin air, because that might make Bitcoin go up and might make it even more attractive. So we still have the whole Empire Strikes Back scenario out there. And this is the kind of thing that's going to bring it closer. It's clearly a subject that's of interest to Janet Yellen and Jerome Powell. And the question is, what are they going to do about it? And again, that's another interesting thing that's going to happen in the next year, where they have to figure out whether they're going to fight it or co-opt it or do something else, or just, you know, stand back and let it happen. I don't know. I don't think they really know either, because the idea that they understand this stuff is just as far-fetched as the idea that I completely understand this stuff. You know, they don't have any special knowledge about any of this. They're just people, reasonably well-educated people who have very bad economic models that they've been acting on for the past 30 or 40 years. And they're going to try to apply those models to something new that they don't understand. So a bad model applied to something that's not well understood can produce anything. You know, so we have no idea what's going to happen as far as governments versus Bitcoin in the next year.
For sure. Hey, and just one point on that, a close friend of mine had a friend who worked at the Boston Fed. And this was 6-7 years ago, and I'd mentioned it before on the show. He put up a basically a computer in the lobby of the Boston Fed that would give quotations on cryptocurrencies. And until that, like, virtually nobody at the Fed had ever heard of Bitcoin or anything else. They knew nothing about it. Now I assume they're a lot more schooled in it. Hey, finally, strange weather patterns, China flooding, they're blowing dams in China. We got like half the U.S. West ready to burn down. And we've gotten a lot of rain in Florida lately. What are your thoughts, John?
My thoughts are, I don't like this. We had a monster heat wave out here in on the West Coast. And, most of the Pacific Northwest doesn't get big forest fires because it's damp. So the forests are wet enough that they don't burn. But, you know, 2 weeks of that 95 to 100 degree temperatures that we had here for a while would create a tinderbox. So a lot of the things that are happening right now are very scary. Already most of the West is burning. You know, it's another fire season out here, but it could be a lot worse, because drying out the Pacific Northwest would be a whole different thing, because these are really dense forests out here. They'd have a lot of undergrowth because they haven't ever burned, you know, so everything that falls just kind of stays there until it goes back to dirt. So a fire sweeping through here would be an inferno. So that is one thing. But you're seeing floods and things in places where they don't normally get them this severely, like Germany, I guess it was, that had a monster flood just lately that they're still trying to clean up from. And a lot of people died. And China, as you said, they have a lot of floods, but they're having another big one this time around. So weather tends to be variable, and you tend to get crazy things every once in a while. But this is it's a lot happening all at once. And it's very disturbing, because I would hate to think those climate change models are real. You know, I've been going on the assumption that that we don't have the ability to model climate in the long term, and we don't even predict weather in the short run very well. And you hate to see those models start to have some predictive ability, because their long-term predictions are horrendous, you know? So I'm going to continue to think that weather and climate are two different things. But what's been happening lately is really disturbing, maybe because it affects me, you know. So much of our opinions, I think, are personal. And they are for me a lot of the time. You know, it's hard to separate what just happened to me from what I think about the world in general. And that's kind of where I am now with this, because stuff is happening to me and I really don't like it.
Hey, you know, in China, it's a little bit far out there from us, you know, on the other side of the world. Remember when you were a kid and you dig a hole and they say, you know, you keep digging and you'll get to China eventually. Well, the Three Gorges Dam, which is the largest dam in the world, also produces a lot of hydroelectricity. It's impaired. They've denied it. But from my studies, from reviewing the experts out there who don't work for them and aren't compromised, it appears to be impaired. The structure, it's just a matter of time. If it's not this season, it'll probably be another one. And this season looks really bad, at least as bad as last year. Plus, they had a major earthquake there. And this was like last week. So, you know, it's kind of like building a skyscraper on a barrier island in Miami and then being surprised when the thing collapses, because you should have never been building there in the first place, even though you have a great view and it's fun to walk out your door and just go into the ocean. But there are risks involved, and the risks at the Three Gorges just keep going higher in my estimation. We'll see how long it lasts, but it's definitely, weather is always changing, whether it's climate change or whether it's just the natural course of events. We don't really know, but hey, that doesn't mean we shouldn't try to find out and have a legitimate debate about it. I think that's it for this week, John. Just go over to dollarcollapse.com, sign up for John's newsletter, sign up for ours at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Your emails are always welcomed at kl@carrylutz.com. We'll get to them next week. John, or I should say the week after, we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Okay, see you, Carrie.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.